You're listening to PorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast, brought to you by Molly's Spirits. And now, The Porchcast.
All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 69 of The Porchcast. Wow, 69, we're here. It's a very special edition of the show. We are very excited to be joined by Dave Bracey, co-founder of Fresh Fest. He's going to be talking about the festival coming up in a week and a half or so. And we're also excited to be joined by our new co-host, Corey David. What's up, man? How's it going?
Dude, I've been having a beer day. Was over at another brewery earlier. Excited to talk to a different beer industry folk now. So just all beer all the time. Happy to do it.
Awesome, man. And as we mentioned in the last episode, we've now got Bryant Vanderweerd running the ones and twos. He's our engineer, our producer for the show. Bryant, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's going. It's going baby care duties today. So I have a small small intern that she's learning with me. So
yeah, we're not paying the intern, so don't get any ideas about that.
Yeah, if you hear any fun noises, it's like a soundboard. If you say something weird, it's like it's just like a hacky radio morning show from back in the 90s.
I'm Fred from the Howard Stern Show. I'll sit in the background and play all the flatulent noises and everything and make all the magic happen.
Yeah, just natural.
It's all
good.
Real. except this is all real. There's no pre-recorded.
Absolutely. And once again, I'm Tristan Chan. Thanks for joining us on the Porchcast. But let's dive right into it. Before we get into talking today, I do want to give a quick shout out to Molly's Spirits. For all of our Denver listeners or anyone visiting Denver, explore a land of adult beverage discovery at Molly's Spirits, offering a curated selection of beers, wines, and spirits in Lakeside and Greenwood Village, Colorado. Shop over 14,000 products, including exclusive collabs and an extensive craft beer selection in-store or online for curbside pickup or delivery. Learn more at mollyspirits.com. They have a great selection. They've got great beers. You guys should definitely check it out. And they're doing some really cool collabs with breweries all around town. So we really love the folks at Molly's, and a big thank you for them for supporting us. Today's guest is Dave Bracey, co-founder of Drinking Partners Podcast and also the co-founder of Fresh Fest, the country's first beer festival focused on showcasing Black-owned breweries and Black brewers and Black culture. Launched 2 years ago in 2018 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, this year's fest will look a little different, however, as it shifts to a digital format as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. So, Dave, thanks for coming on the show, and congratulations on the precipice of another great, great festival.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, man. We haven't done anything yet, so
fingers crossed, right?
Yeah. What a great idea! I love an ideas guy. I can't actually put any of this into fruition, but I'm gonna come up with some wowzers. Yeah, I'm gonna dazzle some people.
Well, first and foremost, I do want to mention. I know that you've got a background in comedy. Comedy was a bit of a gateway into beer for you. Corey, who's now one of our co-hosts, is also a comedian who performs at breweries. So tell us a little bit about how you got into this industry to start with.
Started doing comedy, was doing that for a couple of years. Comedy in Pittsburgh, most of the gig that you get booked for, and entertainment in Pittsburgh, is just, an excuse to keep people drinking for like 2 or 3 hours. So, like if you can, keep people in there and buying, then, they will book you. If you can bring more people with you, even better. So, performing a lot in, bars and open mics, and a lot of the shows that we started producing, that I was producing at the time, were in, they were like rehab projects where like, a bar would be like, look, we got a dead night. Just opening back up, or just some kind of like you're just looking for somebody, looking for some entertainment to load it up and bring some people in there or whatever. So, after about 2 years of producing and doing comedy, linked up with Ed Bailey, my co-host for Drinking Partners, and we had been working together for 2 years at that point in comedy, and was looking for a way to kind of get our name out. Outside of just the, 100 or so people that we would see at a venue at a time. And podcasting seemed, pretty inexpensive to produce. Epicast knew everything about podcasting. They had a beautiful studio. Ed was like, yeah, let's call it Drinking Partners and keep this continuation of the conversations that we would have outside of these bars and venues during the comedy nights. So, we started the podcast. It was the first couple of episodes were like a, hot topics, hot takes kind of a thing. We did that for like two episodes. We realized that one, Twitter exists, so all the hot takes are taken. and two, it was just real awkward talking to each other. It was like for a half hour. It was weird. So we switched gears and made it an interview process, an interview podcast. And because it was called Drinking Partners, there was this fledgling kind of this new scene growing in Pittsburgh with the craft beer scene. So we hooked up with Full Pint and then Brew Gentlemen. We did our first live podcast. So Full Pint sponsored an event, and then Brew Gentlemen brought us in to do a live podcast. And we loved that shit. They loved us. And they were like, hey, you guys should go hang out with these other guys, Hitchhiker and Grist House, down the street. And we were like, wait, what do you mean? It was weird to hear a business recommend other businesses. Home Depot doesn't recommend Lowe's. You see what I'm saying? So it's like that whole camaraderie and that collaborative, mentality. It plugged us into the scene, and then we took those, those mentalities and tried to apply those to our, our comedy and our art. And that's kind of, how we came to be into this craft beer scene. And doing these shows, finding these craft beer sponsors, we're like, hey, we can introduce you to a new market, of people that, maybe not be into craft beer, but they love comedy. And, it's the same demographic of people, age range, disposable income, willing to take a chance on, new things. And we had a lot of success, working with bands and different, mixologists and artists, on our shows. So, it was like, why not add some beer to that? And it was a model that seems to still be working.
Yeah. Cool. Dave, you might want to adjust your earpiece a little bit because the audio is a little touchy. You're good. I understood everything. And I think anybody that had a couple, it just sounds like you had a beer or two already. So have another tasting glass and I think you'll be sounding crystal clear. But aren't you glad Tristan didn't ask you to tell a joke first? That's always a beautiful thing. So he's like, oh, you're a comedian and you didn't have to do that?
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, doctors aren't there oh, you're a heart surgeon. Just open me up. Open me up, bro. It never works that way.
I mean, I was going to ask you to check out this rash, but we can do it after the show. It's about two buttons down. So with comedy, it seems like there are a ton of parallels between the beer industry and the comedy industry, which I'm sure you've noticed. There's a lot of collaborative effort. It's a lot of people within one scene kind of working together to kind of propel the industry. So did you find a lot of that, when working with comics and working with breweries, that collaborative effort and spirit? And because you're always going to run into situations where there's some infighting, but for the most part, everybody kind of wants to bring the whole scene up.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely, so there are parallels, but I think that was a thing that in the art, especially, so Pittsburgh doesn't have the biggest comedy scene, right? Especially when I started, there were maybe 30 working comics, regular kind of comics on the scene. You go to New York and they got hundreds. Yeah, I mean, so it was there was some infighting. There were some folks that understood that we kind of all needed each other, but there was a lot of this infighting in the Pittsburgh scene. And not even just the comedy scene, but a lot of the arts and entertainment in general, the bands and music weren't they were split up into all these different types of scenes, and they weren't talking to the comedy scene, and the comedy scene wasn't talking to the visual art scene, and the visual art scene wasn't, and it was all of this kind of disjointed, art scene here in Pittsburgh. And we were with the podcast, we were able to kind of bring people in and get to know them and then connect people and say, hey, you guys are just right down the street. Why aren't you working with them? And why aren't you working with those guys to
Natural connection.
Yeah, these connections or whatever. So
There's a lot of ego that gets involved sometimes, though. That's the thing about working with artists. And you get that sometimes with brewers as well, where somebody just thinks that their shit don't stink and they don't necessarily want to work with somebody else, or they feel like somebody else is getting something before they are. So there's you kind of got to run your own race to a certain degree, which is easier to say with art than maybe it is with business. But
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you hit it on the head. Like, it's, you know, people counting other people's pockets and saying they felt like they, you know, this, that, and the other. And like, you know, I ran into that myself. Like, when I first, you know, got into comedy or whatever, like looking at people getting gigs and being like, I'm funnier than a dude. Like, you know, why would you book that dude? You know what I mean? Like,
name names.
You never know what anybody's, you never know what anybody's path is. You never know what, like, you know, how they came to be or whatever. You can never, like, you know, like you said, you have to run your own race. Their path isn't my path. And that's the quickest way to burn yourself out and then just become embittered, like just bitter as shit, you know, thinking, oh, well, I know, you know, I deserve this or I deserve that. And like with production, you know, it taught me to kind of like, I shouldn't be the center of attention. You know what I mean? I shouldn't be the best on the, you know, whatever. Like, it taught me to build a platform to give other people time to shine. And like, totally. Through doing that, I found more shine. And, you know, like, I think that it's a mentality that really can be, you know, adopted a bit more in the artistic scene. Because with the brewery scene, like, it's numbers, right? Like, if you have a bunch of like breweries doing well on the strip, the whole strip is doing well. It's harder to see that in the art scene. Yeah. You know?
Totally. Well, you talked about kind of bringing together all these talents and incorporating them and allowing them to kind of all shine. That was kind of the model that you all adopted with Fresh Fest, in a lot of ways. It's a beer festival unlike any other, in that it's not just a beer festival. And I know that I listened to you speak on the Good Beer Hunting podcast. And one of the interesting points that Michael Kaiser brought up was the fact that, you know, you all did a lot of research into, you know, what works for beer festivals, what are the great aspects of a festival going experience, not just for festival goers, but also for, you know, the people who put on the fest, the brewers that attend the festival, you know, the venues. You all incorporated that in terms of feedback, but then you also looked at like, how can we differentiate it? And so Fresh Fest in its first 2 years, you all had, you know, such unique components, like, you know, chefs that showcased, you know, cultural Black heritage in cooking. You all had DJs, you all had musicians. Tell me a little bit about kind of all of those influences and how you were able to bring them together for this cohesive festival.
Damn, that actually sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah. just you talking about it right now, I was like, damn, I wish I could be there.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I wish somebody else would do a Fresh Fest so I can attend that shit. Like, it's
organizing all that stuff. Yeah, there's so many moving parts, like you can't actually enjoy the day.
Yeah, no, I don't get to see most of that. I don't get to have most of the beers. I don't get to see most of the acts, but it really was like, so, you know, doing this podcast, honestly, like, you know, sitting down and interviewing, you know, all these talented people, I mean, like, over the years, and just providing a platform for them to, you know, be heard and to have a conversation, that long format conversation, you know, really does build, you know, some great connections. It's a little deeper than the, you know, the quick, you know, newspaper interview. It's like, all right, let me get your quotes in and then, you know, boom, and send it out to you. And, you know, a lot of these entities, you know, they are passed over by some of the bigger media, right? Like, you know, and that's what we saw, that gap. We saw that kind of like, you know, all the mainstream, all the big you know, papers and radio shows and things of that nature. They were all looking for the guy that was coming into town that day, that weekend, and like, you know, making a big thing. And they were interviewing that. And there would be like 100 different articles about like that guy that came through town, but nothing about like, you know, these 50 bands that are playing this weekend, you know, or, sure, or, you know, that new brewery that isn't making the hype beer. That's just like, you know, just started growling some things up and, you know, whatever. You know, so providing that platform, we met a lot of different types of people. You know, and And it allows us to reach out to people that we are fans of. So like we interview people, we didn't take the, hey, let's go find the hype beast, like kind of mentality. It was like, if I like what you're doing, I want to talk to you more about it. And that's what we did. So, 4 years after that, 4 or 5 years after doing the podcast and doing these events, we're like, okay, well, once we decided to do a festival, because people kept saying, you should do a festival. We were like, why? Why would you do a festival, a beer festival? There's a million beer festivals a week now. Why would we do another beer festival? That doesn't make sense. But once we found the cause and we saw that a festival could fit this cause, we were like, all right, cool. I mean, we already know everybody. So, like, let's just hit them up and see if they want.
Just get everybody in one spot. Bring the homies together.
We would hit them up and was like, yo, we got some money in a stage. You want that? And they were like, yeah. and it was dope because we had built a reputation for putting on dope events. Our events, when we started out, we started out with cross collaboration with, bands opening up to comedy shows and then bringing mixologists and beer into it. So it's free beer, BYOB, plus you're getting a band and this comedy for like $15. Like, who's doing that? People are leaving feeling like they're underpaid. The comedy club model is charge them $50 for chicken fingers and Budweiser. The anti-improv model. So, after years of building these events, building this reputation of putting on dope events for both the venues, making sure that we pay all of our artists, that's big for us. Like, if you do a Tricky Partners event as an artist, you're getting paid. Like, that's just what we do. That's everybody awesome. Should be doing. You know what I mean? And it's not like we discuss up front. We don't do the, we'll door split it. And then if it's a bad night, maybe you're not getting paid. No, this is what you're getting paid. And if we don't fill the seats, then we take a loss, because if we sell more, we're not paying you more. You know what I mean? Like having that model of making sure that we pay our artists, making sure that we build dope events for we're not price gouging the customers, making sure that, we're promoting the venues well enough. Like having that reputation, whenever we reach out to people, years later and say, hey, we're thinking of doing something like that, and not asking a lot of favors, after a while, they were like, yeah, sure, what do you need? Once we gave the idea, we threw the idea out there, all of those talented people then throw their ideas into it. And they go, hey, have you thought about doing this? Have you, I'm really good at doing that. Do you need help doing this? And then it becomes way more than anything anybody could have ever thought it could have been. Because, again, I think it's a matter of one, steady reputation, but then two, allowing artists to do what they do. And brewers and all these folks that are in this industry, they're all artists in their own right. So.
Yeah. Dave, real quick, fix your earpiece one more time for us.
Oh, man, my bad.
Hey, you're good. No, it sounds better now. We just want everybody to hear that sweet baritone angel voice of yours. So that way they can just flies across the radio waves. So wait a minute. News flash to me, though. You mean comics get paid in anything other than drink tickets? This is the first time I've heard this.
I done lost it. It's no longer a thing.
Okay. Yeah, probably not a good thing. But
I don't do much of anything. We have a tech guy. This COVID thing has been,
It's good. We got a nice shot of your smile right now. That's a plus.
I think hopefully we'll get Day back on here in just a second. And can you hear us now? Oh, all right. Well, we'll continue on.
Kristen, have you ever tried to run like your own beer fest?
We have actually multiple times.
I should know more about the company that I work with, but I just don't. Oh. So that's.
we've done a couple of beer festivals along the way. There he is.
Oh, you're good, bud. We were just talking about a beer fest that Tristan has done in the past. So I wanted to compare some do's and don'ts kind of stuff.
No, man, I'm sure one of the things I did want to talk about, that Corey kind of brought up is like the difficulty of putting on a beer festival in general. I mean, there's so many different factors that I think people don't take into consideration. But one of the things I found that was super interesting about Fresh Fest was the fact that you all even created like a ticket tier for people within the neighborhood who might have just been walking by, heard the music, maybe saw some of the tents, and wanted to just check it out. And from what I understand, you all made it super accessible. Was it only like, what, 10 bucks for people to participate?
So the festival this year, the first 2 years we were down at Nova Place, and we did have the VIP and the early access and the regular admission. But last year leading up to the festival, we did a mini beer festival about a month beforehand.
Okay.
We did it at a black owned venue, and invited the community in. We wanted to give it out for free, but we wanted to just make sure that if people like registered, because it was only it was less than 200 people that could come.
Sure.
So we made it $5, you know, like a registration or whatever. Packed in, what was it, 8 breweries. We had free food, a DJ, a panel discussion with various professionals in the industry. And, you know, just like this, you know, just kind of like, how do we introduce, you know, like the black community to the beer industry, and meet them where they are, because that's how you create change. And, you know, as much as we tried to make it as accessible as possible the day of the event, you know, it's a Saturday, or, you know, maybe somebody can't catch the bus because the transit system in Pittsburgh is trash, or maybe $50 is just outside of their price range, or maybe, you know, they've been burnt or they don't really know what it is. And $50, like, you know, when the median income in Pittsburgh for black households is like, you know, less than 30,000, $50 is a gamble. You see what I'm saying? So like, you know, like I'm not about to do that, especially if I don't know anybody all over there, you know, like who's over there. Yeah. You know I mean, like sure. Who's going to be in the building. You see what I'm saying? So we eliminate as much of that as possible and pack in as many of the elements of the festival as possible so that people see see what the craft beer industry has to offer, because we're not just out here trying to sell beer. We're here trying to sell opportunity. We're trying to say, yo, this is $119 billion and we got less than 1% of this. So, you know, like not only does this beer taste better than what you know, but these opportunities are better than what you knew as well. So,
yeah. So speaking to that a little bit more, what would you say, and this is more of a heady question, I suppose, but what are the biggest hurdles that like the black community faces when it comes to getting into the craft beer industry? Because I think for a lot of people, a lot of white folks and other, I don't know, just other ethnic backgrounds, maybe they grew up with their father was a home brewer, or they just had more accessibility to it. Maybe there was a brewery like in their neighborhood that they moved into. Like, what do you see as some of the biggest obstacles that are kind of in the way for like getting the black community like more involved and more integrated? And are you guys, is that what the whole, that's what seems like what the whole event's about, right?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, systemic racism keeps us out of a lot of things. If you look at industries outside of the beer industry, like I don't know many industries that are dominated by black people other than maybe the McDonald's industry. I mean, like it's, you know, you got basketball, football, like the things that we're told that we're able to do, you know, we're allowed to do, the ways that American society can accept us, like shut up and dribble. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, you have systemic racism that keeps us out of a lot of things. So, you know, like you said, you know, like Reagan came through and locked up all our daddies in the 80s. So you have, you know, you have the breakup of the black family, crack epidemic, that came through. You have redlining that doesn't allow us to, accumulate generational wealth. You have, you know, you look at the beer industry and the fact that they marketed, you know, bullshit Colt 45s to us, you know, in the 80s or whatever, while, you know, you had, you know, craft breweries popping up in Cali and Colorado or whatever, we were drinking, you know, like malt liquor. And then you look at the fact that when craft breweries open up, they typically open up in, you know, if they open up in a black neighborhood, it's not going to be black for long because, you know, gentrification soon comes. Even if you do get interested in it, and you want to, you know, get a couple of loans and start a business, redlining is still a thing. Like it was a thing back then. It's still a thing now. It's hard to get financing. Even when you do open up a brewery and you're in the brewery and you have a brewery going, if you get hit by, say, a pandemic, and then your supply chain starts to get cold on you, and it's like, oh, that line of credit starts to dry up a little faster for us than it does for other people. So, totally. You know, I mean, there's a lot of reason, and, you know, and then, you know, again, the fact that we don't make as much money as other demographics. So again, you know, like, it's a luxury item. So, you know, luxury items are, it's like, ah, but like, and it's not like the culture has been, you know, like, oh, hey, welcoming to us. Like, if we want to try craft beer, we got to go into a white neighborhood.
Well, you bring up a really good point there, Dave, because, like, you know, we saw this just last week when a group of Florida breweries penned this letter to the governor of Florida talking about the fact that they cited breweries as being the number one, or as being one of the main forces of gentrification in the neighborhood. Mm. Well, if that's the case, well, yeah, I mean, that is the case. And, but it's also the fact that they're flaunting that is a problem in and of itself. But, you know, if you have gentrification that's being caused by breweries, clearly, if it's pushing out Black Americans, then those Black Americans aren't going to want to go visit those breweries because it's going to leave a sour taste in their mouth, right?
Exactly. I mean, is there a way that you can kind of hit like a sweet spot where a brewery moves in because the warehouse space or the factory space is available and it's the amount of space they need for the right price? But could that be an opportunity for them at when they're opening to start offering more programs like to the neighborhood, to college students that are about like in that neighborhood for like university or something like that, like right when they open, so that it kind of, they integrate into each other?
You know, I mean, I definitely think that awareness is key. Awareness and willingness, right? Because there, I get it. I get to an extent, right? Everybody lives in their own bubbles. You know, Black people don't go out of their way to integrate white people into their lives. Unfortunately, we, you know, we're here. We don't have much choice, but, you know, Black people stick with Black people, white people stick with white people, like Indians stick with Indians. Like, I mean, that's just how humans are to an extent, right? So I could see how, like, you know, some kid is like, yo, I want to open up a brewery with my friends, and they find some space, and they, you know, they trick it out, and then they hire their friends. They're like, yo, I got this space. Come down. Come work a couple of hours. Come lift some kegs. I'll pay you in beer. Yeah, you know I mean? And then they do the thing. And then the people that they're going to attract are going to be their friends and family first. Like, all right, well, you know, oh, Tommy just opened up a brewery down there. Let's all go down there and drop, you know, some money on Tommy's brewery, right? And everybody's talking about Tommy's brewery. And then everybody's coming through to see his shit because he's getting better at this beer shit, right? Like, and next thing you know, somebody's like, oh, well, I mean, that's the new hip spot. Let's get some property or whatever the fuck. They're not, the brewer isn't thinking, yo, man, we got to get these Black people out of here. Like, that's not their thought. They're just trying to make ends meet and start something that they, you know, it's a passion project. But, like, they don't see how what they're doing and their lack of awareness is negatively impacting. Yeah. Other people, right? Yeah. I mean, like, now some do and don't care, and that's every issue that we have on the planet. Some know and they just don't care. Some, you know, like, know and they're making efforts, and then there's just that middle ground that, like, people just don't know, and you have to tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, have you noticed? Like, you know, and that's what we've been doing with this festival, with this podcast, you know, for years. I've been tapping the industry on the shoulder and saying, hey, have you noticed? Like, we're the only Black people in this room right now. Like, that's weird, right? Like, you know, and you're seeing the industry now, they're hitting this plateau, and they're like looking at ways to expand, as all industries do after they've cannibalized white dollars. They're looking at other ways to sell their product. And in the past, they were able to do that by just vulturing and saying, hey, you know, like, let's make some cool marketing and then get their dollars. But in the age of social media, if you're not authentic, then they're going to sniff that shit out pretty quickly. And there's a lot of gatekeepers and guards to all of these oppressed, like, communities that are going to say, yo, your product isn't welcome here because you just want the dollars. You're not actually giving us opportunity. You're not actually caring about us. You just want our money. So, you know, I think that, you know, like, the industry has been you know, a great way to gentrify a community, and it continues to be so. But I think that the way to do that is with awareness. And like you said, when you first get in, saying, you know what, like there's why don't I hire within the community, the people that are right outside the door? And why don't I make the efforts to do that? And you have to understand why you need to make those efforts in order to do it. And if you don't, then, you know, you never will make those efforts. You're just going to, it's going to be charity for you.
Yeah. I mean, two things to point out would be Tommy's Brewery sucks. Their beer is terrible. It always has been. So everybody knows that. It's diacetyl bombs left and right. Second thing would be that when you're starting a brewery, to your point, people want to, you know, your friends, family, a lot of times those are people that are willing to do stuff for free, right? Like, so if you can have that compromise with people within the community, then that's great. But I know that's an awkward conversation too. You know, if you just like, you go up to a stranger and say, hey, we just opened up a brewery in your neighborhood. We don't want to take it over, but I need you to come down here and work for free for a couple months.
Yeah, I mean, so every brewery at some point starts to hire people. Like, that free shit only gets you off the ground for the first 6 months, maybe a year or whatever. Every once in a while, you might have some crazy project where you got to get some extra hands, and you're like, all right, cool.
But it's like a bringer show where you're like, I can only ask these people twice to come to this terrible comedy show, and then I've burnt out all the goodwill.
You got a spreadsheet for your bringers, yeah. I mean, you got to rotate your ask. Like, I mean, you get two asks a year, motherfucker.
I remember when I first started doing comedy, and it was just like bringer shows, right? I would be going through all of my text messages, and I'm like, oh damn, the last three times I've texted this person, it's been, hey, can you come to this show? I didn't text them at all. Otherwise, I'm like, I'm a bad friend, or we just don't talk very much. That's
true. Well, I mean, you talked a little bit about the concept of, you know, white breweries who don't really understand or aren't really aware of like this cultural appropriation. I had kind of reached out to you a while back because I noticed a situation that happened in Pittsburgh where, you know, a brewery was utilizing, I think it was like an image of like of Biggie or something on their beer labels. And yet it was like, you know, they weren't actually doing anything towards the Black community there. It was just like, hey, we're going to throw up some rap lyrics and, you know, we're going to look like we're catering towards a Black audience, or maybe they weren't even trying to, but in a way they were still appropriating the culture. And so, to talk a little bit about that, because I think that's something that a lot of brewers don't really realize and aren't really aware of. Because, you know, sure, admittedly, I'm sure they're fans of the music and they want to, you know, they want to pay homage to an artist that they really enjoy. But what they don't realize is they're making money off of that image. They're making money off of that association. And I think that's something that people don't really take into consideration.
Yeah, I mean, so putting Biggie on a label is like, you know, like the Washington Redskins. Yeah, you know I mean, like putting, you know, a Native American on the side of the helmet, like. You know, I mean, especially with the history of breweries coming into these neighborhoods and gentrifying, you mean you will get up all these Black people up out of the neighborhood and then put a Black man on the can? Like, I mean, like every time I go into the brewery and there's rap music, there's no rap people there. Like, yeah, I mean, there's not even like, and they don't even have like Eminem white people in there. Yeah, I mean, they don't even have like a B Rabbit somewhere in the back. Like they're like straight, like, you know, skateboard or like dirty hippie white folks. Like it's not even the genre.
If they were gonna put anybody on the label, it should have been Brian Gumbel. That's who they should have.
I mean, they got the Beastie Boys, man. Y'all got like they got so many, and there's so many there's Willie Nelson. I mean, there's so many like white folks that they can put on camp. And I get it, right? So like I get the appreciation for the art, right? But if you are, you know, somebody said to me like, oh, well, you know, I grew up listening to Biggie. I bought an album. So why can't I like, you know, like use his image or whatever, you know, 20 years later on a can to make a profit. And it's like, so you mean to tell me that this dude like gave you like some of the best music that you've ever heard in your life. And then after he's dead, he owes you his image as well. So you can make more money? Like, where's the give back? Like, where do you give back? Like, that $15, that $10 or whatever for that tape that you gave back in the day is not enough 20 years later to be like, all right, now he owes me a little something. Like, come on, man. Like,
and your four pack costs more than a Biggie album, if we're going to be.
So true.
If we're calling and it out.
Run that shit back. Like, you know, like it's wild. Like, what have you given to the Black community to say, I deserve to use Black images in order to make a profit? Like, did anybody Black, like, and then if Biggie is the last Black person that you listen to, then like, do you really like Black people, bro? Like, they've been making rap music for the last 20, 30 years, man. Like, I mean, that's all you got? Like, you know, it makes it seem as if it's easy because he's dead and he's a pop icon. So I can put this on here, act like I'm cool, but I don't really have to like give back to the community. I don't really have to care about racism. I don't really have to like make efforts to like hire a more diverse staff. It's lazy as fuck. Like it's lazy as fuck. So if you're doing it at this point, I feel that like there's enough of the conversation that's happening in the country in Trump's America that like if you're still doing shit like putting a Biggie like, you know, label the whole nine and you're throwing it on there, it's purposeful. Like it's willful ignorance at that point. You know, and or you know, you're looking for controversy.
I think your Redskins analogy is actually a really great one, because I think there was some willful ignorance, but I think when you frame it in that sense, it actually brings a lot of relevance that people might now be able to understand a little bit better as well. So
I'm just shocked that Biggie's dead. This is the first I've heard of it. I'm really surprised. Thanks for ruining my day. On that point, really quick before we get off of it, is just so that comparison with like the Redskins logo, right? The Redskin, like the phrase Redskin is one that people would find offensive. Like people in the Native American community find offensive. That's a slur. As opposed to Biggie, where it's more the representation of him but saying the word Biggie itself like isn't a slur in and of itself. I get where you're coming from, but I could also say that argument like those are different things, right? Technically.
They are different. Like the term Redskin, is offensive. But if I took a can of, you know, Biggie Pale Ale, you know what I mean, like, you know, back to the hood, they'd be like, oh, yo, who made this? And I showed them a picture of these like bearded white dudes in flannels. They would feel a certain way. Like, yeah.
Also, the irony of a Biggie Pale Ale can't be denied. You know, that's of all the things he was not. I don't know.
I don't know. Does Biggie even like hazies? Did they even ask? Like, he was a
moat. Hell no. Like, hell no.
I don't understand who said that. Like the Biggie that was, because they're all hazies. Have you had a Biggie beer that wasn't a fucking hazy? Who said like nobody asked his mama that shit?
I haven't seen a new beer anybody's made that's not hazy in a while.
I think Biggie was more of a spontaneous fermentation guy. I think he and Jeffrey Stubbings were kicking it back in the day. No. Real quick, I do want to remind folks, I know that we do have some people tuning in live on Facebook right now. If you're doing so and if you have a question for Day, feel free to chime in the comments section. We'll be able to see those comments, and I'm sure Day would be willing to take some of those questions along the way. Day, what are you drinking right now? Tell us about
that. Man, this 4 Points overbranded. I stopped down there earlier today. It is a juice bomb, man.
Oh, I mean, 8.5% too. You're getting after it.
Eight and a half. Like, you see the color on it? It's just delicious. They make good beer. I'm not
straight up OJ. Just crushing some OJ over there.
Yeah, it's got like berries. I don't know. Like it's just hops, but apparently it has all these like berry aromas and flavors and earthy tones and textures and shit like that. I don't know. I don't know any of that. I just know it's delicious. It's a thumbs up.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit, because one of the cool aspects of Fresh Fest is the fact that you all do these collaboration beers. Tell us a little bit about that concept and how it's going to be adapted this year for the digital version.
You know, bridge building is huge. If we're going to change the world, we need allies. We need to build bridges. And that's just it. Like, you know, as men, you know, we need to be talking to other men about, you know, misogyny. As straight, you know, individuals, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I need to talk to other straight people about homophobia. Same thing with the white community. Like, you know, white folks need to talk to other white folks about racism. You don't get that to happen unless you build these bridges, these connections, and you start to see why there's a reason for diversity, right? Like, diversity and inclusion is a, you know, is an hour-long class that you got to take at your job in order to, like, you know, to appease your boss, right? To check off some things. Whereas Fresh Fest is, you know, equity in action. Like, you know, you're seeing why America and the industry needs diversity. Look at that cool shit that's going on. Look at, like, I mean, the reason why the model of the Beer Fest hadn't evolved in, you know, 20 years was because the customer of the craft beer festival hadn't evolved in 20 years. It was the same bearded white dudes. You know what I mean? 20, 30 years they've been doing these festivals, and it's still a reggae band with a, you know, a parking lot full of beer. Like, so when you introduce new people into it, we're like, all right, well, that looks, I mean, that's cool the first time I went, but like before we did Fresh Fest, I had been to maybe like 5 or 6 beer festivals. The first time I was there, I was like, oh my God, you mean I could drink all the beer? All the beer? Like, and I did. I drank all the beer the first 2 times. The third time I was like, I mean, but what else? Like, I mean, what else is there? Like, in the black community, yeah, we like drinking and shit, but like, we want to know who's there. You know what I mean? Like, we want to know what's going on, what's popping. Like, that be like the Moet and all the shit that we drink. You know what I mean? All that shit, that's background shit. And that's something we could have a little Henny. You know what I mean? That would pop off. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I got that exclusive bottle of Henny or whatever. But again, that's background shit. Like, I want to know, you know, I'm there to see an artist. I'm there to see some ladies. I'm here to, you know what I mean? I'm here to get an opportunity or something like that. So, like, you know, we came in and we introduced that to the festival. It was like, you know, let's build something to do. Let's give them something to eat. You know what I mean? That food, I'm coming for the food. If you tell me there's good food there, I'm coming. You tell me there's that band I like is there, I'm coming. You telling me that, like, my man's is about to come up on his own beer? I'm coming to that. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you got your own little t-shirt company? I'm coming to support that. You see what I'm saying? There was all these different aspects that we put into the festival, and people came to that, and they got, like, introduced to some shit. Then it was like, oh, shit, what you mean I could own my own brewery? Or I could be an artist and, you know, be an artist for the industry, or I could be an accountant for the industry, or I could be just about anything that I am for any other fucking thing, I could be that for the industry. So, you know, like, you see that, like, with the collaborations, every booth that was there, there's a story there, right? You have, you know, like, Dr. Hollywood, she's a rapper, hooked up with Butler Brewworks. He checked out her videos. He was like, well, I guess I'm going to make an ice cream and Moscato beer, because that was the name of one of her songs. This motherfucker brewed a ice cream Moscato beer. It was like an ale brewed with muscat grapes and vanilla and shit like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, damn.
And the bottle was sexy, the name was sexy, the branding was sexy as shit. Like, people, like, the flavor was one that it mimicked champagne and ice cream. Black women were like, yo, I can fuck with that. You know what I mean? Now you got a whole new demographic. Not because you were trying to vulture the culture, it's because you gave real opportunity to someone. Y'all had a conversation, and now your whole shit is better as a result of it. Both of it. Now Dr. Hollywood drops an album and can release some, you know what I mean? There's some ice cream Moscato beer sitting there, you know what I mean? To help go with that release. That's the type of shit that happens when you start talking to people outside of your own little bubble. You know what I mean? Cooler shit happens. So, you know, that, like, that the collab is huge for the festival, and this year is no different. We weren't able to bring black breweries into the state this year, so Tom Poet had this great idea. There used to be this mix pack that Stone used to put out where they would have these collaborations. There would be like 6 different collaboration beers in a 12-pack or whatever from, like, these breweries. And it would rotate. It was, like, crazy. So he came with the idea of having 8 black-owned breweries around the country pair up with 8 breweries, local breweries here in Pittsburgh, to do a mixed 8-pack. So, like, and the split them up into 2 4-packs, and each 4-pack features a dark, a hoppy, a sour, and a lager. So, like, you know, Tavor picked up all the black-owned breweries, are going to ship those across 25 states, and then Beverages to You is going to pick up all the local breweries and ship them across PA, so that people are able to order these 8 beers, get 16 different breweries, 4 different styles delivered to their door during a pandemic, which is...
That's awesome.
It was unheard of before that.
Pretty amazing.
You know, and it was a way to get black-owned beer, right? Like, black-owned beer to people that, like, may have not ever been able to get that before. Like, there's less than 70 breweries in the country. Like, most of them are in, you know, states that have black people in it. So most people, like, you know, most states don't have a black brewery. So, you know what I mean? Like, you know, PA doesn't have a black-owned brewery yet. Harris Family is coming. You know, Two Locals is coming. But, like, we still don't have a brick-and-mortar black-owned brewery here in PA. So, and a lot of states don't. So, you know, we're able to
that's so crazy. To get that. We put together, you know, when the murder of George Floyd first happened, we put together a list on our website of black-owned breweries across the country. And I was shocked that, you know, we could only find around 60 or so out of the 8,000 breweries in the country. And so, you know, one of the things that we wanted to do was just bring awareness to that and also say, like, hey, like, we've got to be more intentional. We've got to open this up. We got to make this industry more accessible. I think it's awesome that Garrett Oliver is starting the scholarship program to get people of color into brewing, which I think is super, super important, because, you know, people often ask about, like, how can we actually make tangible difference to further, you know, to promote diversity in craft beer? Well, the way to do so is to make brewing accessible to people. And I think previously it hasn't been done. You know, I know that we're going to be participating in trying to make Cicerone certifications, scholarships available for people of color as well. So, you know, we want to provide an outlet for people to actually have access to some of these institutionally, you know, more predominantly white or more predominantly affluent certification programs that, you know, allow people to get into beer. So,
I mean, in any of these smaller communities, you just don't know something can be reality until it actually happens, right? Like, you don't know what life can be like until you see somebody else do it, or see somebody that you know or trust and come on board with them, or somebody that you look up to, you know. But Tristan, to your point about that article, and something I actually wanted to bring up was, I think it was important to put that together, but we got a surprising amount of backlash from some people about putting that list together, which was ridiculous. Like, there were people that were like, I will not go to a brewery based on the color of, based on somebody's race. I will not go there for that reason. And it's like, how could something so simple as just trying to support, like, a new business or somebody that might be trying to pursue a passion, and all we're doing is highlighting ways that you can help them, and it's still met with adversity?
I mean, all this festival was, you know, like saying, hey, black people are cool. Let's celebrate that. And people got offended because, like,
it's ridiculous.
And it's like, you know, they're like, oh man, you're like, you know, you're trying to sow seeds of discord, and, like, you know, are whites available or allowed to come here, and da 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 da. Like, what if it was a whites only festival? And it's like, first and foremost, most festivals are whites only festivals.
We're already, we already got it.
Secondly, like, we didn't say no whites available. In fact, half of the breweries that are there are white. Like, they're collabs. Like, there's a whole collab or whatever. Thirdly, nobody's ever saying, oh, well, why can't we, you know, why do you have to have a Polish festival? Why does it have to be the Italian festival? Like, you know, why can't it just be the food festival? Like, you know, like, nobody says that shit. You know what I mean? Like, but as soon as you say black, you hit that white guilt. You know what I mean? You hit that, like, oh, shit. Because this shit only works. America only works if white people don't really, like, pay attention to how we got here. Because how we got here was a lot of motherfucking slave labor and a lot of fucking, like, oppression on top of oppression. And the way that we keep this shit is oppression on top of oppression. So, you know, the people that allow that to happen are the white people who are able to go about their day without thinking about it. You know, when they say, I don't see color, that's because you live in a world that allows you to not see color. I get reminded that I'm a black man every motherfucking day. And this was before I became an angry black man. Like, I was just, like, you know, I would wake up and a cop would remind me, my boss would remind me, a motherfucking bill would remind me, a judge would, like, I mean, there's always reminders that you're a black dude in America. So, you know, like, when you say, when you highlight, you know, like, black-owned breweries, the knee-jerk reaction is, oh, well, why, you know, if it's good beer, it'll just be good beer, because that's what they're taught, right? If you're taught, if you work hard, you get good things, then when you get good things, you associate that with working hard. When somebody comes to you and says, well, maybe you got this because the game was kind of fixed in your favor.
They don't want that reality. They don't.
Then it's like, no. I worked hard for everything. I worked hard. No. I deserved all of this. And it's like, let's be real. Here in America, a lot of us don't deserve a lot of this shit. I mean, 100%, even as a black man, like, I'm still a man. I got opportunities because I was a man that other talented women probably should have had. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That disabled people may have had. That immigrant may have deserved that a little bit better because I speak a little well. Even my darker brothers, you know what I mean? I'm light skinned. I'm a gateway black. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not as scary. I don't walk around dark skinned with dreads and big muscles. So, you know, when I walk in, I'm not as off-putting as a darker Negro. So I'm in different, like, you know, circles and whatnot. So, like, you know, acknowledging your privilege means that you have to acknowledge that you've been doing something wrong your entire life, or that maybe you don't deserve something. And that's hard to come to terms with, you know, and that's where you get that knee-jerk reaction.
Totally. Well, I want to bring this up because it's been something that has been kind of on the forefront of you know, beer discussions as of late. And I know it's a lot to unpack, but the Brewers Association has come under scrutiny as of late because of the fact that they haven't done enough to promote diversity and inclusion. I know that Fresh Fest was a beneficiary of the Brewers Association's 2019 Diversity and Inclusion Event grant, but I guess from your perspective, where do you feel the BA fell short and what can be done to correct some of the institutional, you know, lack of diversity that they haven't done a good job in addressing along the way?
And hey, Dave, could you just adjust your mic one more time for us, please?
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
We good? I mean,
you're good. Sounds great.
Sweet. So the BA, we were very fortunate to work with them to get the grants. It helped us you know, at the beginning it legitimized us to a degree to have that, like, you know, say, hey, well, the BA thinks that we're cool, so, you know, you guys should get on board. But, you know, like holding brewers accountable is huge. You're the Brewers Association. So when, you know, when you hear these instances of dickbaggery and racism, then you need to hold your members accountable. What are you there for if not to do that? Like, you know, I'm sure that if you have a brewery that's, you know, infecting people or some shit like that and putting out, you know, terrible product or whatever, there's going to be some discussion and being like, yo, what the, you know, like, what's going on?
You're ruining this for all of us. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're fucking it up for everybody.
Yeah,
I mean,
so can, like, they, you know, does the Brewers Association kick people out ever? Do they get, do they,
that's do part they of the crux of all of this is that, you know, there was a brewery in Minneapolis whose owner showed a noose to a black employee, and yet they're still members of the BA. I think, you know, founders, when they had when they weren't willing to address Tracy Evans, multiple instances of racism in the workplace, you know, they were still allowed to stay in. And so that's one of the big criticisms that the BA faces now is, you know, at what point do you start holding breweries accountable? Like, at what point do you tackle this head on? Because, you know, if you're going to make this a more inclusive, you know, industry, and you're the face of the industry, you've got to do something. You can't just sweep it under the rug and just say, like, hey, we're going to throw money at people. That's how we address it.
Yeah, you can't throw money at it. You can't just buy black friends, and that's what it, you know, like, that's when you look at the funding that they put out, when you look at the way that they put out the funding to, you know, maximize visibility, you know, in that. And then you skirt the subject of racism. Like when it comes up, like, I mean, Fresh Fest didn't exist in 2017. So here you are, you funded this festival and others since then, moving towards this whole, like, all right, you know, we you know, we are acknowledging this because we sat down with them. We said, hey, do you acknowledge that this is a problem? Because if so, then how do we work together to figure this out? So if you've acknowledged that it's a problem, but then what do you do after that? Because money isn't going to solve the problem. Sure. Like, I mean, like, that's like, don't get me wrong. Money is going to help put us into places to help solve that problem. But like, you know, it's like slave owners were rich. Like, I mean, they were very rich. I'm sure they bought off a couple of, you know, like, you know, black folks to say, hey, you know, I don't even know if slave owners had. Did you have to buy black folks when you were a slave owner? Yeah, you had to buy black folks. Literally, you had to buy black folks.
I think that was the big discrepancy. It was the purchase of people.
I think that was the issue.
I think it was the if I understand so money, it correctly.
Money isn't gonna solve it. But speaking out is, like, you mean saying, hey, we, you know, and then and being consistent in that and saying, you know what, not only are we going to support these efforts to fight it, but then when it actually happens, say, you know, like, no, we don't. We're not going to, you know, like some kind of program. Why is it that Founders is reaching out to us to try to figure out how best to figure out their racist problem? The BA should be figuring that out. Like, I mean, they like.
What power do they have, though, really? I'm just throwing this out there. Like, they're not like the NCAA, right, where they can, like, ban you from the tournament for a year or something like that, or take your bowl eligibility away, you know? So, like, because they can't – can they actually fine anybody? And until they pay the fine, they're not BA recognized? Well, I don't know.
Like, it's an organization, right? So, I mean, the power of an organization is being on it, is being there. So if I say I don't want you a part of my organization, now you lose all of the benefits that come sure. with being a part of the organization. Yeah. That doesn't mean I can fine you. Like, I mean, that, like, but I all that's it. You're no longer part of that. Or, you know what? You know, we have this funding, you know, putting together, you know, a board, a panel of some sort, or like to say, hey, you know, for the breweries that need some extra help or guidance in these areas, we have this funding to move towards that. And, you know, before you do all of that, again, you have to hold your members accountable. Yeah. And when your members show themselves to be racist, because let's just be like, every industry has racism. So when your members show themselves to be racist or sexist or you know, homophobic or transphobic or any of the bigotry, when bigotry arises, if you as an organization don't step up and directly say to these people in your organization, hey, we don't condone this. How can we help you? You know, because that's how it is, right? We're not going to kick you out immediately. Nobody is born woke. So we understand that you might be on a different place on your path. Here's what we've come up with in order to bring you along to the new millennium.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, if you're unable to do that, then you're just throwing money at the problem in hopes that people will you know, be like, oh, they're cool, they threw us some money.
Well, I think you hit it on the head in that, you know, I think at the very least, step one is addressing the issue, right? Like, and in many of those cases, they weren't directly addressed, or if they were, there was maybe some, you know, canned bullshit PR, you know, clean cut thing. So I think addressing the issue, but also, you know, not, I agree with you. It doesn't need to be a cancel culture situation. It's like, how can we work together to address this and allow you to understand, like, this isn't promoting an inclusive craft beer community. This isn't helping us as a whole. It's not bringing people to our tap rooms. It's pushing people away. And so I think that's super important for them. It would have been really important for them to do that in those situations. I know we're getting close to the end, but I do want to kind of remind people about Fresh Fest. And for those who maybe are now super interested in participating, Fresh Fest is going digital this year. You all have created, I think, 6 different rooms. Is that correct? Where people can get, you know, a sampling of DJs, of musicians, They can talk. There's panel discussions. There's cooks, there's chefs who are like teaching you how to cook. Tell us a little bit more about that. And then also, how can people buy tickets and whatnot?
Yeah. So we have six streaming YouTube channels. So for $10, you'll get the code, the access to those six channels. from 12 to 3 will be panel discussions, mostly panel discussions and podcasts, right? So, you know, like Garrett Oliver is going to be putting on a forum, Trogues, Dr. J. Nicole Beckham is going to be doing some things. Brandon Montgomery from Black Beer Travelers is going to be doing like a quiz, kind of like a round table tasting with a bunch of folks around the industry. So that's where you're going to get a lot of the, and then, you know, we're doing podcasts. We've got a couple other podcasts and things of that nature. 12 to 3 is where, you know, last year we had symposiums on Friday, and then we had like the, on Sunday we had the wrap up brunch and things of that nature. This year we don't have that. So that's our 12 to 3. Used to be VIP. Now it's our educational portion of that, because we even have like a small business workshop and things of that nature, because it's important that people understand how to get involved with this industry beyond just drinking. That's the success. That's why this festival is successful, is because we're offering opportunity. It's not because, you know, we're getting more people to drink. It's because we're getting more people to see this as an opportunity. Then from 3 to 9, we have six different venues. We have a brewery that they'll be doing some live brewing at, with a collaboration. Gabby, I was just hanging out with her yesterday. We went down to the brewery. She's not really into beer. A lot of the collaborators that we have on the festival aren't really into beer, but after she had a couple of sours and a mint chocolate chip and it was the other one. She had a hazy. She was like, you know what? This isn't bad. Like, you know, like, so she's That's like, awesome. Wow, I like that. That, like, this tastes like wine. And I'm like, yep. So she's going to collaborate, and there's going to be some roundtable discussions, and she's actually going to be there during the brewing day. We have a kitchen down the street. We're going to have chefs going to come in, and they're going to be cooking with beer, food, beer pairings, mixology courses, baking. My cousin took a chocolate buck and whipped it into a icing and threw it on some cupcakes. So like, you know, she's going to be teaching folks how to do that with the cooking courses. And then we have four live stages with two of them are going to be DJs, and the other two are going to be live music performances streamed in HD. We've got camera crews down there. We're not going to have some dude with a cell phone. Somebody said that to me the other day. They were like, I thought you were just going to have like a cell phone and you're just going to like stream it on the Facebook. Like, I don't know what I've done over the last like 10 years of producing to make you think that I would put on a cell phone festival, but like there's real like HD streaming. And shout out to Work Hard Digital. Shout out to HearCore and Epicast, high quality. And we have an app to keep everything in. I mean, we have schedules, we have speaker profiles. We got ways, you know, if you want to get the beer, the collabs, if you want to get a job in the industry, if you're a small business looking for opportunities, I mean, the app has all kinds. If you're that black owned directory, you know, hop on. So,
that's awesome.
That's the fest.
You can buy tickets at freshfestdigifest.com. freshfestdigifest.com. Is that correct?
That's it. Freshfestdigifest.com. Get the app and get to the fest. And we're going to we're going to be releasing beer throughout the month of August throughout the country. So like, you know, beer in Florida and Cali and Maryland and Connecticut. So we're going to be the festival will be available to watch between August 8th and September 8th. There's 54 hours of entertainment, six channels, 9 hours apiece. So you're not going to be able to get, like, if you're watching Garrett Oliver, you're missing Dr. J. You're missing Paul Jones from Cloudwater. You know what I mean? If you're watching, you know, Funkyard X, you're missing four other channels. You're missing baking. You know what I mean? So, like, you can't
get all of this in one day. So it's available for the entire month.
Oh, that's awesome. Very cool.
Dave, if you don't keep up with Garrett Oliver's hat game, I'm going to be very disappointed. That guy.
Dude, that
he was out-swagging both of you guys on that stage. He's always decked out.
Yeah. Yo, when I finally, I don't know if you saw, like last year, when I finally got a chance to be next to Garrett Oliver, I didn't even wear a shirt. Like, I just was like, it don't even make sense to try to, like, yeah, I mean, can't outclass even this dude.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I just,
yeah.
Man, straight up, thank you, Mag, man.
Well, hey, thank you so much again for joining us. I know we hit on some really interesting topics, so I'm really pumped for people to listen to this. And, you know, I'm definitely going to be tuning in. It's next Saturday is the festival. So I encourage everybody to get tickets to join Saturday, August 8th. Be sure to join for Fresh Fest, DigiFest. And hopefully I can make it out there next year if things hopefully get better. So very excited to get to join you in person eventually.
Dave Bracy, Dave
Bracy, thanks again for joining us. Co-hosts again, Corey David, and a big thank you to Bryant Vanderweerd for engineering and producing today's show. A big thank you to Bud Bronson of the Good Timers for providing our intro music for today's show. And a reminder to everyone who's listening on podcast, be sure to follow us on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever listening device you're using. Be sure to give us a little rating if you're liking what you're listening to. And also one last thanks to our show sponsor, Molly Spirits. For all of our Denver listeners or anyone visiting Denver, explore a line of adult beverage discovery at Molly Spirits, offering a curated selection of beer, wine, and spirits in Lakeside and Greenwood Village, Colorado. Shop over 14,000 products, including exclusive collabs and extensive craft beer selection in-store or online for curbside pickup or delivery. Learn more at mollyspirits.com. Once again, this has been episode 69 of the Porchcast. A big thank you for everyone to join us. I'm Tristan. It's Corey, Day. Thanks again. We'll catch you all next time. This has been the Porchcast.